I will move along quickly to just kind of letting you know where you can find the Register of Patent Practitioners and really there's a responsibility for everyone who's a registered practitioner to update your address. And so I like to talk about that at this point because some people don't realize that they'll change their address in their patent or trademark cases when they move firms or when they move offices, but they forget to tell OED, and you do have an obligation to update your address. And you can do that through the OED customer interface and you have the link up there at the top. You can do all sorts of other things too. You can change your status from agent to attorney, and you can change your name, and you can do a couple other things. And they're changing all the time. They're adding features. So for me to give an exhaustive list here would be difficult because they do add things and change things. And it's a really convenient portal to have. We've started using it for applicants to put to send in their applications and update us on their application. So I think that's really convenient and good to move us forward like that. So the IT folks, so whenever I tell them I'm going to do this slide, they say, hey, you know, mention that, you know, when you're inputting your address, when you're signing up, you can put up to 5 email addresses in, and that tell them to put in, tell the practitioners to put in a personal email address in addition to whatever other, you know, firm address. If you want to use that, that's fine. Because when people, you know, they've used the system and then they don't use it for years, they come back and they forget their password and they'll do a password recovery. And inevitably, we're going to send that temporary password for the password recovery. We're going to send it to the email address we have on file. And if that's your firm email address and you've moved firms, there's going to be a glitch in that password recovery. You'll have to call us and it'll take a little more time. So, you know, just a tip, you can put in a personal email address, something that you're going to keep with you. And that way that'll travel with you wherever your physical office goes. All right. So one of the programs that we like to talk about is our diversion program. And it's based on the recognition, that there's a high level of stress, high level of substance abuse in the legal profession, anxiety, depression, things like that. And then based on a 2016 study by the ABA Commission on Lawyer Assistance Programs, that was recognized, that these are things that we struggle with at times in the legal profession at a high level. And, you know, several states have a program such as this. And what diversion is, really to define it for you before getting too far in, is basically taking, for certain circumstances, taking a step away from the formal disciplinary path for some ethical violations. And, you know, with the recognition that in certain circumstances, that's not necessarily... If there's a way forward without formal discipline, and it makes sense that, formal discipline, a suspension, something like that might not be the best thing for someone who's struggling with some of these issues. And, in recognition of that, we started the program in 2017, and it is still a pilot program. It was renewed not too long ago for another few years. And I've seen some of the cases from afar, and it does seem to work, and it does seem to be something that we do use from time to time. And as I said, there, only in certain circumstances can this really occur. And first of all, there needs to be a willingness and an ability to participate in the program. You know, we kind of have to have an agreement with the person that what's going to happen after, as we step away from formal discipline, and someone's going to go to, rehabilitation, they're going to have a practice monitor or something like that. They're going to agree to it, and they're able to participate in that. They're going to be able to stick to that deal, and we need to see that. No public discipline in any jurisdiction in the past 3 years. The type of misconduct needs to be a certain type of misconduct. It can involve misappropriation of funds or dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. It can't result or be likely to result in substantial prejudice to a client or other person. It can't constitute a serious crime, which you can look at the definition of serious crime in Part 11 of our rules. Or be a pattern of similar conduct of the same nature as misconduct for which the practitioner has been disciplined in the past 5 years, which goes towards the second bullet point too. No discipline in any jurisdiction in the past 3 years. So not everything qualifies, but I think it is good. As I said, I've seen it used a couple times, and it really is something that's good to acknowledge that, you know, we do work in a high stress profession, and at times it's not always. If possible, it's not always the best thing to go forward with formal discipline in every instance. All right. A couple other programs that we have are our two pro bono programs. And I'll talk about these for a little bit. I think it's very important. Pro bono service is very important. Working at OED, we see a lot of problems that people have, that the public has,